Welcome, everybody, to another installment of Innovation Crush. I'm your gracious host. I keep saying gracious. I don't know why I do this. This is like the third show I've said. I'm your gracious host. But I'm gracious to have you today. We'll get to that in a second. Chris Denson is my name. And in case you're tuning in for the first time, this show is all about all things innovation, great ideas in the marketplace, and the amazing people behind them. And today we have the mustache impresario, if you will. Adam Garone. Say hello, Adam.
Hey, well, I'm grateful to be here.
Nice. Grateful, gracious. We're all, we're one accord. Yeah. Interview over. I told you. So thanks for joining us, man. I guess just give me the 101. I mean, we've kind of all heard the term Movember, sure. But give me the 101 on you and the movement, and, you know, we'll start there.
Sure. Well, it goes back to 2003 in Melbourne, Australia, and my brother and a mate, they were having beers on a Sunday afternoon, and they were chatting and discussing. About
a lot of your stories involve beer, by the way. I've noticed.
So. Yeah, well, it's a very traditional way things in Australia start and often end, actually, and not so good. But this has a happy ending. The guys were talking about fashion and how everything comes back in a style, eventually, and they had a few more beers, and the conversation turned to there has to be some stuff that hasn't made a comeback, and they could think of two things: macrame. And mustaches. And a few more beers in the day ended with a challenge to bring back the mustache. And in Australia, moe is slang for mustache.
So this almost would have been Macrovember.
Yeah, exactly. All sitting around making pots and indoor plants and things like that. Yeah, so the first year, 2003, created the rules, which are the same today. You start the month clean shave and grow a mustache. And that year was really just an excuse to have a mustache-themed party at the end of the month. And to see if we could grow mustaches, because secretly every guy wants to know what he does look like with a mustache.
How do I look, by the way? This is I've never really truly committed to one until this was going to happen. I'm like, oh, God, and now I have to.
But you're very gracious.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you very much.
Yeah, so we went about it. There were 30 of us that did Movember that very first year, and it was for no particular cause. And the next year, four of us got together, and we were just shocked at the response we got to growing a mustache and changing your appearance. And people would ask, why are you doing it? And it fell a bit flat when we had, you know, we were just doing it for a party, really. And bosses wouldn't let us go and see clients, and girlfriends at the time hated it, no longer our girlfriends. And,
right.
But it was a really interesting journey around putting yourself out there, growing a mustache, and the stigmas that come along with growing a mustache.
Right.
Really, really interesting.
I immediately go 70s porn.
Right, exactly. I'm probably 80s.
I think. Okay, yeah.
Nice. A bit later.
Yeah.
Then the next year, four of us got together, and inspired by the conversation it created and the women around us and all they're doing for breast cancer, we just thought there's nothing for men's health. And the state of men's health is actually quite poor when you compare it to women's health. On average, we die 5 to 6 years earlier than women, and there's no biological reason for that whatsoever. And then we go, hang on, why is there nothing for men's health? And why have women done such an amazing job at bringing attention and causes, campaigns to causes like breast cancer? And so we started to research men's health and prostate cancer and testicular cancer, the two male-only cancers.
Right.
And then, we focus on both of those, but initially it was prostate cancer. That has the same social impact as breast cancer. So
right.
Roughly the same number of men are diagnosed with that disease, and sadly that roughly the same number are passed from it. So that became the convergence of growing a mustache with doing it for a cause, and along the way we came up with that tagline, which is changing the face of men's health.
That's great. You know, I like you tell the story about the rough beginnings, right? And, you know, you were like, you said your boss wouldn't let you go to meetings and your relationships ended, you know, and I kind of liken it to like the growing of a mustache to a journey in business or even in your own personal life, right? Where like as I was growing this, I go, It was ugly for a few days. I'm like, is this the right decision for me? But still that curiosity that you mentioned earlier, which is, I think I might look awesome if I get there. And I think that happens a lot with ideas, right, with businesses. You go through this gestation period where it's ugly. Has this kind of paralleled in your own journey over the last, 11, 12 years?
Yeah, it's actually a very good parallel, and I hadn't thought about that, because even before you start growing, you've got all this doubt in your mind. You're going, I think I could be awesome, but there's 10 reasons why I shouldn't grow a mustache, because I've got an important meeting, or I'm not sure how my wife, my partner might respond to it. And that happens a lot when, you're thinking about a new business venture. You know, before you hit the go button, there's 10 reasons why you shouldn't do it, and maybe there's 11 reasons why you should. And then you get to this tipping point, you're in. And then literally, yeah, the first couple of weeks are pretty rough, because it's like, yeah. And then, but you do get to this tipping point around owning it, being confident with it, talking confidently about why you're doing it. And you go through this journey. And then, come the end of the month, it's like people go on this, it really is a journey of a little bit of self-discovery, because the perception is you're going to put yourself out there potentially not looking your best.
Right.
And that's been the beauty of Movember. I mean, it's on your face. It's in your face. You literally cannot miss it.
And exactly. There's no hiding a mustache.
No. And one of the great things about Movember is it really is the only campaign that certainly we've come across that is being able to engage men at any significant scale in their health. And we do it by the fun of growing a mustache. We often say that the mustache is a Trojan horse to getting men engaged in their health, because they want to be able to confidently explain why they're growing a mustache, and they're doing it for men's health. And then they might have an uncle or a father that's been affected by prostate cancer, or a friend that's had testicular cancer, or whatever the particular reason is. And then that becomes such an important message, because over the course of the month, they, by virtue of explaining this over and over, get engaged and knowledgeable about their health,
yes,
knowledgeable about the health risks men face. And what Movember has done is created this environment where men feel comfortable talking about their health. Because if I sat down with you, and we've done some research on this actually around how to better engage men in their health and get them to take action. And some research that came out was that we funded was, women are typically very, very good at sitting across a table like we are, face to face.
Right.
And talking about whatever it is.
And crying.
Right, yeah. Just opening up. And
right.
But men, we're much better at sitting or standing shoulder to shoulder and having a beer or watching a game or growing mustaches, where there is something else going on. But the physical posture of standing side by side is really, really important in getting men and creating these environments where they feel comfortable talking about things.
And this is like a scientifically proven thing.
It is. Yeah. And in a way, Movember, if you go to a guy and start to engage him in prostate cancer, unless they're recently been diagnosed with that and fighting for their life, that we're just not interested in it, right?
Right.
And so it becomes really important around, well, go back to that 6 years age difference. Like, one of the big things is getting men educated about the health risks that they face. But the biggest thing is getting men taking action when they don't feel well, and that could be physically and mentally well. So we've got to create more pathways and more environments where men feel comfortable, doing that.
Right.
And often, I've been in this game for like 10, 11 years. Often I'll feel not well and put it off. And I know I shouldn't do that. Right. I know that.
But I have heel spurs right now, and I get up every morning, I'm like, ow, and I'm like, I'm going to go to the doctor, and then I never do. Like, I can tough it out. Like, I think there's something about the bravado of being a man and bacon and meat and exactly, conquering, like you're supposed to be the man, quote unquote, I'm going to use quotation marks, right?
Yeah. And that's how we're brought up, and to be providers, be the tough guys and look after ourselves and look after our families.
Right.
And often that can be at the expense of our own health.
Right.
And so that's, the attitudes that we're trying to change, and it's a lot of subtle little things, and there's no magic bullet here. It's a lot of little things. And the great thing I've certainly noticed, is that there is definitely a new generation of thinking and attitudes coming through.
Yeah.
You know, I know my dad's approach to his health is because of my vendor fundamentally changed. He'll ring me up and say, I went to the doctor and, you know, my PSA levels, which is the an indicator for prostate cancer, they're fine. They're at zero. And we would never, ever otherwise have that conversation. We'd be talking about football or like Australian football when I call him on Skype, yeah. You know. So.
Which Australian football blows me away, by the way. Like,
yeah. I miss it.
Did you play?
I grew up playing Australian rules football and then later in life got, you know, more passionate about rugby union.
So you had a mustache since you were like 12 or 13 then?
I was born with a mustache.
That's what I thought. Okay. So I guess the journey from 2003 to now, right? Yeah. The first year was rough, you know, and I think you tell a story about how you raised $50,000, $70,000?
That was in our second year, 2004. So when we converged growing a mustache with doing it for Men's Health, we cobbled together a website and we had 450 guys in Australia and we raised $54,000. And there were no online donations at that stage, and it was sort of download a form and go on,
right.
Total old school.
Too many steps.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, it's sort of the basic metrics were sort of defined back then. Each guy raised, I think at that stage, about $90, but they had a lot of conversations over the month and it attracted a decent amount of media attention at that very small scale. And what's happened over the course of, you know, 11, 12 years now, and if you wrap in this year, since then we've had 5 million guys growing, supported by the women in their lives, and we've raised, by the end of this campaign, we've raised $650 million.
And wow.
So it is a pure grassroots movement. So we've increased the average that each guy raises. So each guy, you know, globally will raise around $130, have a lot of conversations and create, you know, in their sphere of influence now, which includes, right, social media, they're posting and updating and then a lot of media. And it literally generates billions and billions of impressions for this stuff. So suddenly you create this momentum that suddenly governments and the World Health Organization and organizations like that start to take notice that,
yep,
there is this gender disparity in the difference in health outcomes for men and women that no one's talking about except for this grassroots movement called Movember. And then suddenly it creates another, you know, momentum.
What was the tipping point, right? When did you know? Yeah, you know, I think that first year you're like, okay, cool, like, we, you know, it's a party. Then, yeah, you're like, oh, we raised a little bit of money. And then, like, when did you know, like, oh, wow, this is about to be awesome.
Yeah, I think it was the third year. So the first year, fun. Second year, 450 guys, $54,000. And it was a passion project at that stage, and it still was. Even
you still had a day job.
Yeah, absolutely. And we just wanted to give back something to our community. We're at that stage in our lives where we wanted to do that. And it was really the third year where we put together a much better website. You can make donations online and you could sign up online and all that sort of stuff. So, and in the third year, we had 10,000 guys and we raised $1.3 million. And so to put that into perspective, the Prostate Cancer Foundation in Australia, who we donated all the funds to, they had a staff of about 10 people. And through all their events over the course of the year, they were generating $600,000. So here's 4 guys doing it in their own time,
right,
and over the 4 weeks raised $1.2 million. And that, and off the back of that, there was a whole heap of media and interest around how can you possibly get dudes to grow mustaches and raise funds for a charity. That just does not make sense.
Well, even from an innovation standpoint, that's where I, like, when I first heard of Movember, I was like, really? Like, it was kind of like, yeah, mustaches? Like, is that big of a deal?
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's also, you mentioned something really interesting, is this idea of impressions, right? The number of times you hear somebody talk about it, the number of times you see a mustache, and you're like, you know, even if it's a stranger, you're like, is that his real mustache or is that just for this time period?
Right.
And then, you know, it becomes this sort of social thing, and it's almost like you're not cool if you are not doing it.
Right. It's this really interesting thing. It's like, you know, walking down the street or you'd be on transport or something and you'll just look across at a dude with about a 2 or 3 week-year-old mustache and, you know, it goes back to the Fight Club analogy, you know, it's like you just look and you know because you know that dude's going, right, through the same sort of pain or is at that sort of discovery phase,
right,
of Movember. But yeah, you know, when we started Movember, it was like there was no social media. Right. I remember us setting up our first MySpace page as our first foray into this whole thing. But what is amazing now, obviously, is that everyone has a much greater ability to broadcast messages through their social platforms. With that comes an inordinate amount of noise. But when you are changing your appearance to the extent that you're growing a moustache, that is interesting.
Yeah.
And people do take notice of that and go, well, hang on, why are you doing that? So it sort of piques that interest.
I had one of my team members laugh at me at work the other day. They're like, hey, is that for Movember? I was like, yeah. And this is somebody who like never laughs. I'm like, wait, what's so funny?
And I think that's the other beauty of it. It's certainly Movember is an online campaign. And from an innovation point of view, we've certainly tried to create at Movember.com a social networking platform, albeit around a cause, albeit around a small period of time, but we connect people from around the world that are doing this.
Right.
And the other great thing, though, is it actually takes place in the real world. So you have these amazing real-world interactions. And I always say to anyone contemplating Movember, doing it for the first time or maybe come back and doing it for the second time, I always say, I guarantee you there'll be one conversation that'll make it all worthwhile. Because of your moustache. And it might be at Thanksgiving dinner this week where you go home. We get so many emails this week from dudes going, oh, I'm not sure I can rock a moustache back home. Not sure how to be received. And we always say, listen, go home, rock it. And
then get gravy in it too. Yeah. Get gravy and turkey bits.
And then we get another stream of emails the week after Thanksgiving where guys go, you know, for the first time ever, because of my moustache, the dinner conversation turned to men's health,
right,
and learned that an uncle or a dad or something had prostate cancer, and this family had never ever talked about that stuff.
Yep. And it's interesting because you brought me back to a moment where I had an uncle who's like super buff, you know, grew up in the projects of Detroit, but he was like really smart and funny. And our favorite thing is like me and my cousins, when we saw him, he would shake our hand and like squeeze it like as hard as, and we're like, no, don't do it. We were 9, 10, 11. And then probably when I was like 18, he had stomach cancer. Right. And I hadn't seen him for a while. And we went to go visit him in the hospital, and he was so thin. And like it was just such a weird, again, from a man to man perspective, it was like daunting to see him in that, you know, in that state.
Right.
But I don't, like, I honestly don't think we ever talked about that. I've told that story to a couple of friends of mine, right, but never like, open conversation around this topic of broadly health, like what caused it, how could he have prevented it, you know, all these different things. So that's,
and one of the most basic things we can all do for our health, men and women, is know your family medical history.
Right.
And that's simply just sitting down and going, hey, let me understand that a little bit better, because if your uncle had that, there is a high probability that you might be have a higher chance of getting that. And certainly,
thanks, Adam.
Direct blood brokers. I don't mean to bring that show down, but it's
show's over. You're absolutely right. It is like, you know, not being afraid to share that information, and it's not taboo anymore. A lot of brands, including yours, you know, you talk about scale and reach, and there's obviously a very specific demo. And you know, for somebody like me, it actually takes a little bit longer. You see my arms, I'm fairly hairless. So the hairless rat community of individuals and or women, right, you know, how do they support and participate in, you know, in the cause, if, you know, they actually, like Brooke here, I can't imagine seeing you with a mustache. It would be quite scary. How do you reach scale, and how do you engage people who are not necessarily growing the
the
hardware.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's talk about women first. And women play such a hugely important role in Movember, and always have, right from the start. And because particularly when you think about, you know, the starting premise of, so let's have a moustache themed party. I mean, if it was a room full of dudes with moustaches,
right,
it sort of gets a little boring and weird. So women have been a really, really important part of this campaign right from the start. And they actually, when you think about it, their roles parallel their roles in men's health. Women are often the people that prompt us, whether it's our moms, our girlfriends, wives, whatever, that prompt us to actually go to the doctor.
Right.
And go, hey, you've been sick for a week with this. You know, you need to go, or be proactive around your health. And in many ways, women play a support role in Movember. And it's Movember sort of flipped the sort of the standard sort of charity model on its head. Normally, it's been the women that have been creating the campaigns and championing these particular causes. And, you know, men, obviously, during Movember are sort of the guys doing the growing.
Right.
And then the women are supporting and championing that. But we get a lot of women signing up at Movember.com and as team captains and then recruiting all the guys in their lives to grow. And a program that we've been working on and soft launch this year will become much bigger part of the campaign next year is an initiative called MOVE. So the first four letters of Movember are MOVE.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the best things we can all do for our health is stay active and move throughout
the day.
It doesn't mean necessarily going to the gym, but it's like get up and go for a walk. Don't be, you know, tied to your desk for hours and hours on end. So underscoring the importance of MOVE and moving throughout the day, what we're going to do next year is introduce a program where you can sign up and make a commitment to move.
Right.
So my dad might go, hey, he's going to walk 30 minutes every day of Movember. But it'll be the first time ever women can actually make a tangible commitment to the campaign. So they might go, I'm going to do 30 yoga sessions or spin classes or whatever it is, walk, you know, 100 miles over the course of the month. Yeah. And then the way we'll tie it back to men's health is they'll then issue a challenge to the men in their life to match their move. And get their dads, their brothers, their boyfriends involved in this campaign. So it'll be another way, you know, and we talked a little about it before the show. It's like for us, like any other brand, it's like how do we sell fresh? How do we stay relevant?
Yep.
How do we give the community more ways to stay, well, support the campaign and you know, one of our taglines is having fun and doing good.
Well, even along those lines, like how do you decide, right? After, you know, is this the 10th year anniversary? Or is this kind of like 11? Like, do you count the mustache party?
that was zero.
Okay,
it was ground zero. Yeah,
but no, as you grow over this course of time, and like more and more people take note, more opportunities come your way. Mm. Like ideas are flooding in. Probably, hey, you guys should do this, and then you're having your meetings. How do you filter, right? Because you're gonna have 20 things on the whiteboard that all sound awesome. Right. And then you go, oh shit, well, we only have, you know, 6 people or whatever the number is, and you have to actually make something happen. So how do you make what's that decision process like?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question, because it's like as you're growing rapidly, one of the things, key things is staying sort of laser focused on your core. And now as we sort of reach maturity, if you like, in our growth phase, we know we need to sort of innovate and add different elements to the campaign. But we've always said through this journey, what we've said no to has defined us more than what we've said yes to. Hmm. And
so November.
Yeah, November. Yeah, go. I literally
back
take
to
it back.
Roots.
Yeah. Take it back to November. But, you know, every year we get, you know, brands going, hey, let's, on November 1, let's have fake mustaches that people can buy for a dollar at the counter and put them on. And we've always said no to that, because for us that would be just a one-off gimmick that, you know, you just can't replicate again.
Right.
I sort of think, you know, a lot of people ask me about the Ice Bucket Challenge and things like that. It's a wonderful, happy accident for ALS.
Right.
And you couldn't architect that. It just happened and it went viral, and amazing sort of financial windfall for them that they'll then be able to invest in research. It is very, very hard, if not impossible, to make that sustainable, because it was such a one-off short-term,
right,
you know, campaign. So for us, it's like looking at things and going, you know, what is this going to look like in 3 or 4 years' time? Is it a sustainable campaign that's going to ultimately add to, for us, you know, getting more men and women engaged in the campaign, having more conversations, raising more funds, which means we can, on the back end, fund more research and, you know, cure prostate and testicular cancer.
That's great. You have background in the military.
Mm-hmm.
What has your military training experience given you as a business person?
Yeah, leadership would be the answer to that. And I think The military is one of the few environments where you get taught and coached on how to be a great leader. And then you actually get to practically go out and exercise that leadership, and you learn through that experience. And I think certainly my time, which has been extensive now outside of the military, there are very few other environments where you get that. Certainly team sports, which I played a lot of, you get that. But you know, a lot of people, I think, mix up the difference between management and leadership. And you know, for me, leadership is about, you know, creating a vision of what you want to achieve or your organization wants to achieve, and making that vision so crystal clear, and then bringing in great people and inspiring them to believe in that vision, both at an individual level, but more importantly, at a team. And then a leader, their role is really inspiring those people and getting them to operate at a higher level, both individually and collectively, to achieve that vision.
Right.
And you always say, you know, the true test of a leader is in a crisis, and also how their team performs when they're not there.
Right.
You know, you can lead by fear, but as soon as you go out the door, there's like, you know, the team are going to go,
party time. Right?
Yeah, party time. Keep back and do nothing. But I think a lot about leadership, and
that's when everybody rips off their Velcro mustache.
Yeah,
and
you're exactly.
Like, hey, he's gone now.
Yeah, yeah. Let's get back to growing beards or doing something else.
What is your personal brand as a leader? Like, what do you bring to the table? What do you have, a style? Is there a personal philosophy that you have? You know, that kind of resonates throughout the organization?
Yeah, I think one of the key characteristics of being a great leader is leading by example. And I think that's in your work ethic, so working hard. And I, you know, through this whole journey, and I talk a lot now about entrepreneurship and startups and things like that, there is just no substitute. And I haven't seen it for working hard. And as a leader, you've got to be really great at your job. To get the respect of your team, you need to be really good at whatever it is you do. Whatever it is your particular role is in this team, you need to be the best at it.
Right.
Doesn't mean I'm the best at finance or you know, marketing per se. And I can surround, and you do surround yourselves with those experts and those guns in that particular field, but they know and look up to you because you're really great at what you do.
Right.
And for me, that's still about, you know, creating this vision, creating a pathway that everyone sees and knows and how to get there. And then it's most importantly, when things aren't going so well, or there's you get a curveball, you know how to deal with that, and you bring the team together and go, all right, we've got this, it's fine. You know, let's navigate this way a little bit and we'll get around that.
This is just popped up for me, but why did you care enough?
Yeah.
Right. Because I think, you know, I think we all, like, even most of the people who participate in Movember, it's like a blip. They may do it 1 year out of the 10 or 11. Yeah. But like, for you to grow and take this on as your life's work and travel the world and, you know, do what you do for the cause, why did you care enough to do that?
It's a really, really good question. And it's one I've thought about a lot, because we started this as a charity. So yeah, sure, I get paid a wage, but that's it. There's no bonuses. There's no percentage of what's raised. There's nothing like that. So, you know, if we had gone down a different path and started an entity that created, you know, annual turnovers of $120, $130 million a year, and our cost ratios are like 10, 15 cents in the dollar, you'd be billionaires, right? Like, and we often like thinking, oh, wow, well, maybe we should have. But
what if we applied the same principles?
Yeah.
Right.
But I have thought about this a lot, and I think in reflection, it's like the first part of my life was I joined the military, and like in America, it's not compulsory, and I went to sort of the equivalent of West Point in Australia. And I just think there is part of me and my makeup and my DNA that is about service and giving back. And initially that was to the country, and then there was a transition period when I was working in the corporate world, and now for me it's service to this particular cause, which is men's health. So I think that is built into me. And I think beyond that, though, when we got into this, it was to do something good in our community. We never ever thought that this would become a global movement. And when you get into this, and I often reflect on this transition from being successful to being significant. And I think the first part of your life is often about being successful, and that's academically, athletics, you know, new jobs, new titles, material stuff. And I think you get to a point in your life where you go, that's all good and interesting, but being significant is far more important. And when you being significant for me is about serving other people or causes that are in situations that are less fortunate yourself. And when you start giving back, it's the most rewarding, humbling, amazing thing you could ever possibly do.
Yeah.
Because you start to see the impact that you're having on other people and the community, and it's addictive. And sometimes it's like you almost feel selfish because you're getting so much personal sort of satisfaction out of it. And so you get into, and you know, often people go, my brother and I were two of the four co-founders. So people just assume that our dad had prostate cancer and that was the starting point for this inspiration. And thankfully he's cancer free, but we often joke it's back in the day he did have a sick mustache that we wanted to
nice.
Emulate. Yeah, but you just get into this and you get surrounded by truly amazing people that, you know, believe in the cause and donate their face for 30 days, and you have these amazing conversations. And now down the path so far, we've built a lot of financial capital through the campaign, and there weren't a lot of people researching prostate and testicular cancer. There's just no funds in it, and now you've got the financial
and fun in it.
No, exactly.
No fun or funds.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. Yeah. And that's what the breast cancer movement did so wonderfully well. They made it sexy, fashionable, talkable, and so you want to be part of that. And we've done the same with prostate and testicular cancer. And so now you get these researchers coming to this field that we're funding. And not only that, we're the only cancer category that's able to unite the prostate and testicular cancer research world.
Right.
Because we're in 21 countries, because we're the major funder, we're now connecting researchers in Boston and LA and Montreal and London and Sydney that didn't even know each other existed,
right,
researching the same thing, and now working together and collaborating. And, you know, you see, you get, and as we got into this cancer research world, it's like you just shake your head.
Yeah.
It's like, how inefficient is this? And the only thing that ever gets shared is a breakthrough that gets written up in a journal.
Well, that's what I was going to ask too, is, you know, as, because we hear about so many causes, right? And you may hear about a triumph, or, you know, hey, we were able to build an orphanage in Africa, right, and all these different things. So there are some tangible results. I think with things like cancer, you know, we've been dealing with cancer for God knows how long.
Right.
Where have you seen breakthroughs because of the collaborations and the things that you've been able to kind of facilitate?
Yeah, if we just focus on prostate cancer, and so we helped fund a couple of years ago the identification that there's 28 types of prostate cancer at the University of Michigan.
And I went to Michigan State, but that's okay. That's fine. Right, should have moved it over just a little southeast.
So now we know there's 28 types of prostate cancer. Of that, there's about 8 of those cancers that are aggressive and need aggressive forms of treatment, radiation or surgery. But the other 28, you know, you can live with that cancer as long as it doesn't move beyond the prostate through active surveillance, diet and exercise, and a drug regime. The issue at the moment is we can't tell a guy what type of prostate cancer he's got and therefore what type of accurate treatment he needs. So therefore, we're over-treating guys.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a financial burden. The side effects are horrible. Incontinence, impotence, bowel disorder, depression. Guys go through, rush into surgery, radiation, come out the other side and go, my life is horrible.
Right.
I'd rather have died of prostate cancer than live like I'm living. So we know there's 28 types. We know there's 8 aggressive types. So we need tests now to tell a guy what type of prostate cancer he got. So literally last week we announced a breakthrough out of Toronto, Queen Margaret Hospital up there. 3 years ago, we invested $20 million in this particular research project to help identify what type of prostate cancer a guy has. So This will help probably 20% of the guys and be able to go accurately what type of prostate cancer we've got, therefore what type of treatment he needs. And prostate cancer, it's an interesting cancer because there's not typically any signs or symptoms until it moves beyond the prostate.
Right.
And then it's often really hard to treat. But if you catch it early, you apply the right type of treatment, it's 100% treatable. And so our aim here is to cure this cancer, and we will. We're confident we will. And it won't be one cure.
Right.
It'll be hundreds of cures. And it'll be so much so that it's tailored cures for each individual.
There was a really interesting talk. We talked about an event called Idea City that happens mm-hmm. in Toronto. There's a talk up on that website now where a guy talks about 3D printing cancer cures. Because he says, you touched on something really interesting, is this idea that everyone's body and DNA and makeup is different, and cancer is it's your own cells, and so there's going to be slight variations, and kind of being able to create sort of that one-to-one solution or one-to-few solution is really interesting. I didn't have a point there, but that's
what it will come down to, really, right. A highly personalized treatment. And that's where we're heading. And prostate cancer will become a curable and manageable disease. And there's a lot of things we can do to prevent prostate cancer as well. It's like diet and exercise is part of it. But some of us are dealt a genetic hand that you're just going to get prostate cancer.
Right. Is it true that men should sit down and pee?
No.
Okay. All right. I guess I've been doing it wrong all this time. Sorry, Maria. I'd heard that years ago, but I didn't. All right. Thank you for clearing that up.
Yeah. I've got no evidence to back that up, by the way.
Damn it. I've been fooled. You talk about this successful to significant. I love that. How do you not let it go to your head, right? Because you be fine that some people get into a position of significance,
right.
And all hell breaks loose, or they're they become a tyrant, or just there's horror stories that you hear about working with or for certain people. How did, especially kind of building it from nothing, right? Yeah. It wasn't handed to you. It was kind of like, all right. So how do you stay humbled? You're like, I'm not humble.
Yeah. It's again, great question. And we, as we grew as an organization, we realized we needed to define a set of values when we got past about 20, 30 employees and other people, other than the founders, started to employ people to come into the team. So we wrote down and 8 values, and our number one value is fun. Up there is a value which is humble. And it just means, having a humble approach to everything that you do. Be proud of it, but be humble. And it's something we think about a lot as an organization and as a leader. And I can tell you, if any of us get out of line in not being humble, my brother will call me out straight away. One of the other co-founders will, or even staff.
Right.
And it is about being proud around what we've achieved and what we're doing. But we have a humble approach to everything we do.
Right.
And, just as a practical example, so when I first moved to LA, so I came across in 2007 to launch the Movember campaign in America and in Canada. And the Prostate Cancer Foundation is based in Santa Monica. So I ended up resting my laptop here and calling at home. And the weather and sort of similar vibe to Australia is sort of helped. I forgot where I was going.
Just the idea of staying humble and, moving to this location and the environment you set up.
Yeah, right? Sorry, yeah. And,
no, that's fine. We won't edit that out.
No, keep it.
This is real and raw.
Yeah, it was like, media in LA is celebrity driven for the most part. And so in media here, you'd always get asked, well, who's your celebrity ambassador? And it's like, well, we don't have one. And I didn't know how to answer that question for many years. And then it was like, hang on, this year we've got literally 800,000 celebrity ambassadors. And for us, we treat every single person that does Movember, every Mobro, every Mo sister, as a celebrity and an ambassador. And sure, we have athletes, we have celebrities participating in Movember, and they happen to have greater reach. right. than the average person. And that's wonderful and we respect that. But we literally try and make a hero out of everyone participating because they're the rock stars, you know. And our role as an organization and the staff working on the brand and the campaign, we you know, analogy is we're the roadies.
Yeah.
And the true rock stars are the Mo Bros and Mo Sisters, you know, participating. We create that stage for them to tell a story.
It's very democratizing in that sense. It's like anybody can be a hero, right? You don't have to be a quote unquote hero. I keep having this analogy in my mind about like a it's almost like a costume party where right. you're all walking in and even though your costume's awesome, like you're going to be impressed by other person's thing. And it's like, oh, you did the handlebar or you did, I love the, you know, it's this and kind of, you know, it is social amazing. Equality.
Yeah, no, it is. And, you know, that's what I love about the end of November parties, which we still have. And, you know, you get these people from all different walks of life, all different ages, and they've gone through this same journey. And it's such a unifying experience, from students to people that are employed to artists to CEOs to people in the finance industry to firemen to, you know, and it's just this amazing journey. We often say, well, cancer doesn't discriminate, you know, and it's like it'll affect anyone and everyone. And the mustache is such a unifier when you come into these environments. And that's what we try to sort of leverage online as well in this virtual environment. And I was in Norway a couple of weeks ago as I was doing the tours of November, and I met the oldest man in Norway. He was 107 years old. Wow. And he's doing Movember. And so I did an interview with him, and his English wasn't great. My Norwegian is non-existent. And so I asked him three questions. I said, have you ever grown a mustache before? And he goes, yeah, I agree. He goes, I was living in London in 1935 and mustaches were all the rage. So that was the last time he grew a mustache.
Wow.
1935, before World War II. And then I said, so hang on, how did you come across Movember? How did possibly in your retirement home at 107? He goes, oh, my son's been doing it for a couple of years. And I go, man, wait, how old's your son? He goes, oh, he's 85. And then my last question to him was, you know, well, what's the key to, you know, living such a long life? And he goes, always have a laugh and always have a glass of beer.
So that is
good advice.
That's great. Which is also how we started the interview.
Yeah.
Your whole thing was over beer.
Yeah.
I look at a calendar and then I see there's 11 other months. We kind of touched on this before we got started. But then I look at like brands like a South by Southwest, right? Mm. It's March. Right. And but people talk about it all the time.
Right.
Right. Or Sundance. People are planning for Sundance. Mm. Or anything, Stand Up to Cancer, even like the concert. We know the seasonality of these things. What sort of tactics, you know, in addition to, say, the move, right, are you taking to stay relevant and, you know, equally as impactful during the rest of the year?
Yeah, again, it's a really interesting question because we are an event. We are an annual event, but we are a foundation as well. So as a foundation, we're funding and managing programs, be it support programs or research throughout the year. So we've got a whole programs department that focus on our program strategy and where to invest the money and then benchmarking the progress on that. But in terms of the community, it's a really interesting it's a really interesting challenge because, you know, in December, it's about saying thank you. But beyond that, it's like, hey, we never want to be saying, hey, November's 6 months off, you know, right. Start thinking about it. But for us, it's about, staying relevant online. So, you know, our email and social media communications. And in the rest of the year, what we're talking about is the impact that the funds that the community has raised is having, and then also profiling people that have been impacted or funded by Movember and telling their stories and giving a human side to it. Then also what we try to do is identify cultural events throughout the calendar where Movember would make sense to be at. So it could be a music festival where we're the official charity partner. It could be a rock concert.
Right.
It could be Formula One racing. It could be whatever it is. That we have a partnership with the organization, and then we have a Movember activation and a festival, which is it's a chill out zone where you come, you can get water, there's cruising music and there's lounges, right. You can just get away from things and relax on Movember. So it's about how do we create these remarkable experiences throughout the year where we're not asking anything. other than come and hang out, have a conversation and keep it going. And, you know, another initiative that we've done in LA, our office here in Culver City, we've got called the Movember & Co. Barbershop. So we've got a barbershop there, and that's open year round. And barbers potentially play a really, really important role in men's health. And because it's the one place we go to every 4 to 6 weeks, we're in the chair for half an hour and we're having this conversation. And so again, another example of a place where you're not surprised to see Movember, but you're sort of delighted to go, okay, that sort of makes sense. You know,
I think I should hide a prostate checker in the barber chair so when people sit down, they're like, Bob! Like a pleasant, healthful surprise. just my idea. I'm just throwing it out there.
Yeah, I'm not sure about repeat customers on that.
Good. I'm sure you have a few. I was going to ask you. You talked earlier about brands and how the fake mustache thing won't work. What has worked for brands and that, you know, that have wanted to participate and support and be a part of the movement?
Yeah, we certainly have a lot of collaborations, and we look for brands that have similar brand values to ours, have a similar audience, and that are brands that you know, our audience would go, oh, that's awesome that Movember's partnered with them. So we're partnered with Harry's Shaving, Discovery Channel, Tom's Shoes, Barbasol, Shaving Cream. And in each case, we try and carve out a really unique position for them in the campaign. We don't have, you know, Movember brought to you by Brand X. It's like we have a lot of partners. And we deliberately call them partners, not sponsors.
Sure.
We're not after cash in return for your logo all over stuff. It's about an authentic partnership because they believe in the cause. And then, you know, Tom's Shoes, we've done this 5 seasons now, and we've carved out, they do a collaborative Movember shoe, and it's gone on to be the best male selling shoe.
Really?
One of the best selling shoes, year on year, because it's like it gives them a story, it gives us a story to tell to a particular audience.
That's awesome. And then Classy.
Yeah.
You've launched this thing called Classy. Tell us about it if you can.
Yeah, sure. So I'm the chairman of an organization called Classy. A couple of guys down in San Diego started a few years ago and got connected with them. So the platform is a technology platform where startup charities or established charities can come and use their technology platform to create a website and a fundraising platform. So I got connected with the guys probably 4 or 5 years ago, and these guys are it's a for-profit business with a social purpose. It's about powering, you know, a new generation of philanthropy, really, and they're very well connected from a technology point of view into all the social networks. And that is such an important aspect now for charities to come in and start up. And we've developed our own, Movember has developed our own technology platform, in part because in 2004 there was none of these third party platforms, and we're in 21 countries and it's complex. And, you know, if we were starting over again in the US, it is much more, it's much more efficient to go onto one of these platforms that's established. They got thousands of other charities on it, so therefore they can they can leverage those learnings, and you can come on and have literally overnight as sophisticated fundraising platform as we've got and we've been developing for 8 or 9 years. So
isn't there something to be said though about, like, you know, building a movement in a grassroots way that you had to in 2003 versus Kiva or Kickstarter? Or, you know, it's kind of like, unless you're the coolest cooler, you know, you're going to be a blip, and maybe we'll see the product. Maybe we'll see that light bulb that stays on all day.
Yeah.
You know, just throwing it out for conversation's sake, right? A movement versus actually being able to help a particular cause. Mm. And is there a differentiation there?
Yeah. You know, what we've seen with all these third-party platforms, whether it's a Kickstarter or a Classy platform, is
very classy.
Because the barriers to entry now are so low to actually start up a charity or, you know, a particular business. On the one hand, it's a great thing because there's a lot of people going back to and firing that entrepreneurial spirit. But again, there's a lot of noise out there, and even though you've got to, you know, use the Classy platform, you've got a great fundraising environment, that's only going to be sustainable if you can actually create a true grassroots movement. What's What's the cause? What's the issue you're trying to solve? And creating a real emotional connection with that, and then giving people a way to actually support that.
Right.
So whatever it is, you know, ultimately you still need an innovative, fun, engaging way for the community to get involved with that and yes. want to, because you've inspired them. The platform over here really just empowers that.
Right.
And that's the challenge is, you know, creating, you know, what is the next, you know, big viral thing to yeah. for a particular cause that importantly is sustainable.
No,
it's not just going to be a flash.
No, it's just a curious thing, yeah, because it's, you know, you do have there's tremendous resources that, you know, but I feel like the resources that match a vision, right? Yeah. Vision is one thing, then the resources become tactics by which to make that vision happen.
Right.
But just an interesting thought there. What did Adam Garone want to do when he was a boy, little Australian boy?
Yeah, I grew up. I certainly grew up wanting to be an officer in the army. My dad was, my uncle was, and it was sort of just a path that I chose, and I don't remember consciously sort of thinking anything other than doing that. So, you know, did that for 9 a bit years, and then realized I'd achieved everything I wanted to achieve in that environment, and my started doing an MBA, and my world opened up to, wow, there's
so much more things.
Yeah, there's people think differently and right. not all the same way, and that just broadened and opened my world to you know, civilian community, I guess, and then went on beyond that. So
that's fantastic. Mm. So the show's called Innovation Crush.
Yeah.
I was going to call it Innovation Crush Dash, but I didn't know if that would work. We'll change the artwork just for this episode. No, but what out in the world have you seen that you're crushing on, right? It can be in your own space. It can be a technology thing, be something you ate last week or an art exhibit. But is there something out there that you go like, that's awesome, you know?
Right. I sort of come back to, like, you know, people that are great at telling stories. Like, there's so many platforms out there, and you know, some people do crush it when they tell a particular stories. And then, you know, they're just that. They're platforms. They're conduits to tell your story. And what's becoming so important now is, what is the story you're telling? And you know, one example that pops out is humans in New York on Instagram, and I'm just sort of fascinated around their ability to tell stories and get the community engaged. And sure, they do that through Instagram, but again, that just becomes the conduit, right? The path for which they broadcast this message, and where it's so cluttered, and I just fascinated where particular brands telling, you know, there's the shocking stuff, like the, you know, I probably can't mention the Instagram handles on this here, but
don't worry, we're rated R program. Yeah, it's
So you see, like, the Fuck Jerry's of the world and stuff like that, and what they post, and Dan Bazillion, whatever his name is, and the stuff that they post getting cut through for a particular reason. But then here's humans in New York telling really quite sincere and normal, for want of a better word, stories about interesting people on the streets. And that for me is like,
people want that. Like, it's funny because like, I feel like there's two separate groups on the internet. There's the haters, right?
And
it's like, you read any comment on anything on the internet, and you'll be shocked and appalled and, you know, hilariously entertained.
But you're still fascinated.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you can't, like, that's always better than whatever the story was.
Right,
it's
right,
like,
right.
Wow, people really, people are inventive and crazy.
Yeah.
But then there's this sort of endearing, you know, side, that, you know, that humanistic thing. You and I were talking about the Serial podcast earlier, and, you know, there's this, like, this is interesting, human interest, and very sincere storytelling that goes behind it. So last but not least, finish this phrase for me. You ready?
Yeah.
Deep breath. Brooke, you ready? You're going to get this on?
Yeah, she might have to help me.
No, it's easy. Innovation to me is?
Continuously improving. And crushing it.
And crushing it. Shout out to my show. I want to be significant too. So thank you. Do you have anything else you want to add? Like, where can people find you? What?
There's one. Movember.com is where you can find out all the information about Movember, make a donation, coming to the end of the campaign. One thing I didn't mention through all this and was that there's a third funded cause. So we prostate cancer, testicular cancer, two male-only cancers.
Yep.
But a cause that I'm really passionate about is mental health. And that affects men and women, but it's a funded cause for us and a key priority. We've been doing that since 2006 in Australia. We just in the US on the back of this campaign, we'll start funding programs in that area. And people always go, well, what, you know, that obviously affects men and women. But the statistics for men are shocking. Three out of four suicides are men. Wow. We talked about the average age difference earlier. A big contributor to that is men taking their life. And it's a gnarly, woolly subject. We don't know a lot about the brain. Mental health is a disease. We've got to get rid of all these stigmas.
Yep.
We've got to get men talking about it, but most importantly, seeking help when they're not feeling well and recognizing when they need to do that. So for me, that's sort of a very passionate cause.
Yeah.
As I said, my dad didn't have prostate cancer. I didn't have testicular cancer, but I certainly had some mates along the way that sadly took their lives, as did some of the other co-founders. So that is a cause that is particularly important to us. And, it's a gnarly one. It's not an easy one.
Yeah.
We will cure prostate and testicular cancer.
Right.
It's a matter of time. It's more money. And as I said, there won't be one cure. There'll be many. But mental health is a woolly issue.
It's a very different thing. It's interesting. We had a guy on named Jeff Sparr. And Jeff runs an organization called Peace Love Studios.
Right.
And it's all about art and mental wellness. And he's done a great job. But he himself is a sufferer of OCD. And right. But like a CEO, college athlete. And he's just like, at one point, he's like, I was lucky because, I got help early.
Right.
And he was just like, oh, something's not right. Like, it was just, this is a little, and he talks about this idea of this sort of illness being one that you can't see.
Right.
Right. Like, you can see when someone's suffering from cancer, at least at a point.
Yeah.
Or it's more talked about it, and then, does a kid have ADD or is he just a bad kid? Right.
Like,
I have a 9-year-old, and she's great, but it's just like, are you okay? but then, and sometimes, unfortunately, surprise, it is something a little bit more intense.
Yeah. And it is a disease. And like a lot of diseases, if you can catch it early, it's treatable.
Right.
And, we do need to, big one is getting rid of the stigmas, and you do that by making it talkable.
Right.
And getting people talking about it and getting people to recognize the disease. And, the point where, success for us would be when someone goes, hey, I suffer from anxiety or bipolar, the way people would react to them would be no different to going, hey, I've got cancer.
Right.
They go, oh, my goodness, are you okay? What treatment are you getting?
Yes.
How can I help? Versus, and it's just, it's society and what we think is normal and not normal. And, it's just breaking it down. So
well, you've certainly done a great job of it with mustaches and prostate cancer.
Yeah.
So I don't doubt that you'll have success in that realm.
Yeah, and it's just, have it all the time. It's like guys have a conversation about how good or bad their mustache looks, and that's how these conversations start. And then it's like literally it's like, hey, dude, I suffer from anxiety. I take medication for it. And that just creates this bridge in conversation. And
right.
That just changes the relationship.
I think you should just have people like grow afros
just
have their hair grow long for mental wellness.
2015
there
innovation.
We go. That's two free ideas you got for me. Next one I have to charge you. But no, thank you so much.
This has
been fantastic. I'm glad we got to do it. And, Movember.com. Anything else? Your Twitter handle?
Adam Garone. ADAMGARONE.
Garone.
Garone.
No, but see?
Italian.
It's Italian, Australian. There's too many Ians at the end of it. But anyway, everybody, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you, Brooke.
Hey, how are you? she's grown a mustache.
Grew since I mentioned it earlier. But thank you, everybody, and we will talk to you next time.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger. I've been friends with her for 10 years. One of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.